The Beatles are coming. Japanese Beatles are emerging a little late this year, but they are emerging. We'll find out where they are and what they plan to do. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis is here. We'll talk about Japanese beetles, how they got here, how long we'll have to put up with them this year, and what you can and cannot do to combat them. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Donald will answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be with us in a few minutes to answer your questions. But we're going to start the hour with one of Iowa's least favorite invasive species and one of our favorite entomologists. Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis is here. Good morning, Donald.
Hello, Charity. Good to be here.
Well, thank you for being here today. And Japanese beetles are the invasive species. Of course, we're going to talk about today, and they seem to be a little late this year.
Well, everything is a little late this year, but the Japanese beetles seem especially late because they were incredibly early last year. How early? Last year, I had my first complaint about Japanese beetles on June 5th. This year, the first report of Japanese beetles I heard was June 27th. So a good 3 weeks behind schedule from where they were last year. So especially compared to last year, the Japanese beetle seems behind schedule. And not only is it one of the one of our least favorite insects, because of the double whammy, Japanese beetle gets labeled as the worst landscape pest in the United States.
And if it's a little late this year, what is the normal date?
Well, normal is late June, early July. So if you think about kind of a long-term average, it really doesn't, it's not really that far behind schedule, but the cool weather did slow them down. So while we may have seen peaks of Japanese beetles by the 4th of July in decades past, we're still waiting for the peak to happen in some areas. Now, not everybody's in the same boat, and one of the incredible diversities about this insect is how much it varies from place to place, not just from county to county, but from yard to yard, from one person's landscape to the next. Many people are reporting they already have hordes and swarms of Japanese beetles. Others are still asking, are they coming or are we not going to get them?
Right. And for those of us who are still asking that, is there a chance that if we haven't seen them yet, that maybe in our yard or the area where we are, maybe they won't be so bad this year?
Yes, there is that chance. An optimist would look at last year's drought and say, yeah, you know, that was probably pretty tough on insects that had to live in the soil, feeding on grass roots for that period of time when the soil was so incredibly dry. So an optimist might look at something like past weather and say, maybe the population will be down. A realist will say, yeah, they're just not here yet. Someone like me who tries to stay in the middle will say, we still have to wait and see. It's still possible. They could still be coming to you in your area. But the longer it goes, the more likely it is the optimistic view is correct, that it's just not going to be as bad for many of us this year.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this beetle for people who are seeing them for the first time this year, because I'm sure there are those people or people who are new to gardening and landscaping, so they haven't noticed them in the past. Tell us a little bit about this pest.
The official name is the Japanese beetle. It's been found in the United States since 1916, allegedly came from Japan with nursery stock, so it is called the Japanese beetle. Any other combination of words that include Asian are incorrect. And we have another beetle called the multicolored Asian lady beetle, and there seems to be some mixing of the two names, and people will talk about the Japanese beetles that are eating my roses, and other people will talk about the Asian beetle that's eating my roses. No, Asian is the wrong word. It is the Japanese beetle, Papilla japonica. And it's a scarab. It looks like June bugs in this squat body. It's about half an inch long, a little longer. The coloration is actually kind of attractive. They are metallic shiny green for the front half of the body. That's the head and the thorax. And then the wing covers are this coppery reddish brown. So there's a two-tone coloration. The green sort of shines in the sunshine. Then they're fairly obvious that way, but half an inch long is one thing we need to remind people that this is a fairly good-sized beetle. We're not looking at those little tiny, shiny green bugs that you see on hemp dogbane, for example. This is a fairly large beetle. The confirming characteristic that's usually obvious on fresh ones is there's five little tufts of white hair around the edge of the abdomen, five on each side. And in the sunshine, the thorax is shining green, the wing covers are coppery brown, and then you see those little tufts of hair. You've described the Japanese beetle.
All right. Now, you sent me a map that you just put together of the Japanese beetle expansion in Iowa, and it's up to date through last year. Of course, you'll have to do another map for next year. It's been in Iowa since the mid-90s?
1994, our master gardeners and our county extension staff in Davenport, Scott County, knew to be watching for this because it had been across the river in Illinois for some time, and it was first recorded in Iowa in 1994. We have watched it and monitored based on the reports we get from our extension staff and from the public. It's now found in 61 different counties in the state of Iowa, at least as far as we know. It's probably in other areas, but no one has bothered to tell us yet. It was not a wave that moved across the state. It leapfrogged. It was first found in Scott County, then it was found in Page County, then it was found in Story County, yada, yada, yada. It wasn't a nice movement across the state. It moves with nursery stock, with people, with landscape plants, and so it hopscotched its way around the state, and our records indicate 61 counties throughout eastern and central Iowa now report the Japanese beetle.
All right, and you can take a look at the map on our Facebook page and find out where the Japanese beetle is, if it's in your county. It is funny to look at it. Down in the southern tier of counties, Davis County has Japanese beetles, but Appanoose, Monroe, Wapello, Jefferson, Van Buren do not, all of the counties surrounding it.
It's a matter of reporting. So it could be that somebody went to a training, that was one of our master gardeners who had been reading about this and studying about it, found it and knew we were looking for these reports and sent it in. Maybe others just haven't thought to send in a sample, and all this publicity always helps us fill in our map. I would say just because your county has been reported to have Japanese beetle does not mean that you have them, because it was just one spot in that county that reported it initially, and it takes it a while to cover the entire county. Certainly the early places like Scott County, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Dubuque, Japanese beetles are very widespread and most people know what it is and are now familiar with it. And in fact, they are past the peak of the invasion cycle. Others are still in other parts of the state are waiting to see their first one.
All right. And when they come, what do they eat?
Almost everything. I have lost track whether it's 300 or 350 different species of plants they will feed on. They will feed on the foliage. They will feed on flowers. They will feed on fruit. And we start at the top of our list of 300 plants with the big four that we look for before anything else. We look for them on grapes. We see them on linden trees. We will find them on your roses. And number four is raspberries. If you're looking for Japanese beetle, trying to decide whether you have it or not, look at linden trees, roses, grapes, and raspberries. Fruit trees are kind of a close second tier, your cherry trees, apple trees, crab apple trees as well. And another one that sort of surprises me, coral vine berry. Is that the right name, Richard, for the plant? There's a coral vine or something that... there's another grape-like ornamental that we have in the garden that will help, but where we will see them as well.
I'm not sure.
All right. And when they attack these plants, they attack the foliage for the most part. And what do they do to it?
They eat it. They chew it up with their little tiny mouth parts, and they don't like the tough, hard veins of the leaf. So they will chew out the green material between the veins, and it leaves a lace-like skeleton of the leaf. So it's fairly distinctive. You look at grapevines and the leaf veins are still there. You can still see the skeleton of where the leaf used to be, but all the green material is gone between the veins. So it's a fairly distinctive damage that we call skeletonization. They are out for a period of about 4 to 6 weeks in most years. They emerge over a long period of time. They lay their eggs in sod. They disappear underground as white grubs. And we don't see beetles again until the following year.
All right. And if they are on your plants and defoliating, basically, your plants or trees, is there anything you can do?
One thing is to tolerate damage on trees and shrubs, recognizing that they look bad, but those linden trees that turn brown every year from Japanese beetle feeding are still alive. They do recover. It's not fatal for defoliation of healthy trees and shrubs. Flowers, you might screen them. You might choose to pick them off by hand as long as you have enough time and energy to stay ahead of them. The last resort is to spray insecticides, and those can be applied to your flowers, your trees, your shrubs, your crops, food crops as well. Being very careful to follow label directions, of course, but insecticide is a last resort, and it's not a good resort because you have to spray often. One treatment will not solve your problem. It's likely to be every 3 days during the peak of the emergence, maybe a little less often after that peak emergence, but several sprays will be required to keep foliage on the trees and shrubs if that's your choice.
And of course, if you're spraying, you're not just killing Japanese beetles.
Right. And we're past the bloom on linden trees here in, at least in central Iowa. And that's always one we worry about because lindens, when they are in bloom, they are so attractive to pollinators. Bees and flies and wasps visit during the day. The moths visit at night. Lindens produce a very sweet odor and a lot of nectar that attracts a lot of insects. So if you have a linden tree you're trying to protect, wait till after bloom before you apply any insecticides to preserve those pollinators.
All right, and the grubs live in the soil, so can people treat them before they emerge?
Certainly. The grubs are white grubs that live in the soil in sod. They don't live in the tilled fields of the corn and soybeans. They don't live in the tilled soil of your garden. They live in the sod areas. Yes, you can kill white grubs in the sod. You can apply insecticides that must be watered in. They go down into the soil and they will kill the grubs. This will have zero, this will have no impact on the beetle population on your tree the following year. The white grubs that I kill in my lawn is a small dent in the beetle population, and the beetles are highly mobile. Even if I killed every grub in my little quarter acre of lawn, I would still have Japanese beetles on my climbing hydrangea because they would come from surrounding areas. So don't think of grub control as beetle prevention. Think of grub control as saving your grass if that's what you need to do.
All right. Well, we will take a short break here. We'll get back and talk more about Japanese beetles. But of course, we'll also answer your questions about the plants and insects in your life. Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, will join us in a moment. And right now I'm talking with Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. And we could all use a little
help. One, two, three, four. Help. I need somebody. Help. Not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis, and now Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran is joining us. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post your questions on our Facebook page. And now that I have the two of you together, since the Japanese beetles are a little bit later this year, significantly later than last year, but still a little behind, are there any crops or plants that are benefiting from this delayed start to the Japanese beetle season?
Well, I think roses would be a good example of that, that the rose bloom, especially our ever-blooming roses, the ones that come a little earlier in the season, they have been spectacular here around Ames mm-hmm. and central Iowa where I have seen them. And a year ago, the roses would have been defoliated by the Japanese beetles, but especially on the roses, the Japanese beetles will go for the buds. And they will chew a hole in the bud and deform the flower and just make it unattractive. I thought roses looked about as good this year as I have seen, and they may have benefited then from the delay of the Japanese beetles.
All right. How about grape crops? Of course, grapes are not nearly ripe yet, but they've had a little more development time.
A little more development time, that's true. I don't know how they have done with the cool, wet weather early on. So since the beetles were late, maybe the grapes were a little later, too, because of the cool temperatures that we had back earlier in the spring. But with the 90-degree temperatures that we had starting a week ago, beetles caught up. I'm assuming the plants are starting to catch up as well. And if your livelihood depends upon a grape crop, you're pretty astute and pretty well attuned to monitoring for Japanese beetles, watching for the extent of defoliation and taking action when it's needed, whether it comes early, mid, or late, they're going to be on top of it. Those vineyards and grape producers that are required, that must control the Japanese beetle.
Well, of course, there are different kinds of raspberry bushes that produce fruit at different times in the summer, but a lot of people have had pretty good raspberry crops this year, too.
Yes, they have, but we've also heard now in the last week people who are reluctant to pick their raspberries because they're afraid the Japanese beetles that are out there, they're overwhelming them. And the Japanese beetles feed on raspberries by chewing on the fruit as well. This is a really tough one. What are we going to do about Japanese beetles on a food crop that we are harvesting? And when we think of our traditional insecticides, we look at things like the insecticide 7 that we have used for Japanese beetle control for the last 50 years. The pesticide label tells you to wait a week after you spray before you pick. Well, if I wait a week, new Japanese beetles will have arrived, they will have damaged the fruit, and that's just not a good option. So we look at some other things like the pyrethrin insecticides that are available that you can harvest the same day you spray. But those are very weak insecticides that don't kill very many Japanese beetles. There are some experimental things like Surround that you could try is a clay product that you spray on plants that will sort of prevent the Japanese beetles. And then there's this product called Neem, N-E-E-M. Neem is a botanical insecticide that you can harvest the same day you spray. The downside of neem is it doesn't kill Japanese beetles. It discourages them and pushes them somewhere else. But if I were harvesting raspberries and were trying to move the Japanese beetles off, it's the one thing I would try.
All right. And, of course, I'm sure somebody's looking for the silver bullet. What are researchers looking for?
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is the Japanese beetle has been in the United States since 1916, and the East Coast is still here. It did not fall off because of the Japanese beetle defoliation. They lived through it. They survived. They are still producing crops. We will, too. The other thing to remember about Japanese beetle is it's not always as bad as the worst you have seen, especially if this is the first time you've seen this swarm of tens of thousands or tens of millions of Japanese beetles defoliating your landscape. You may think it's always going to be this bad. No, it will moderate after time. And much of that moderation comes from biological controls, other natural enemies that attack the Japanese beetle. And when the Japanese beetle is new to an area, it doesn't bring its enemies with it. But eventually, the enemies catch up and help moderate the populations. And I think in the long run, that's sort of where we will be. And there's been a lot of research on the parasites and the predators that feed on Japanese beetles. And I should emphasize, it's mostly parasites. Your chickens will eat a few, but they don't keep up with the number of Japanese beetles that are there. So the parasites that live inside the Japanese beetle are actually much more effective for us.
All right. And when you say long run, how long?
Well, you know, I've been at this for 3.6 decades already, so I'm taking kind of a longer view. And when I moved to Iowa from Ohio back in the 70s, I thought I had left Japanese beetle behind. Ohio had it, but Iowa didn't when I first got here. But eventually it caught up, and I think back on the situation in Ohio and the friends that I have there and the producers that I know, they're still in business. They're still producing outstanding crops, and the Japanese beetle isn't always as bad as the worst you've seen.
All right. Well, let's get to the phones. We have a lot of people with questions at 866-780-9100. Eric is on the line from Dallas Center. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
Yeah, I missed the whole description. Is it about 3/8 to 1/2 inch long and copper back?
Yes, and shiny green on the head and thorax, and 5 little tufts of white hair around the ring on the edge of the abdomen, 5 on each side. Closer to 1/2 inch to 5/8 than to 3/8. But yes, that's it. It's a June bug. It's in the June bug group. So it's got those little flag-shaped antennae that are out on the front of the head. Yep, that's it.
I think we got plenty of them then.
So. Well, lucky you.
Our apricots and our plum trees and just, you know, like you said, the chewing it up so there's nothing but lace left on the leaves. Mm-hmm. Not too much on the grapes yet, but... we used the you'd mentioned it earlier.
Pyrethrin?
Pyrethrin.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that that's not very effective?
It's effective for the ones it hits, but it has no residual to kill the ones that come an hour later the next day. So you just have to keep doing it. That's the thing. But
okay.
if
we keep doing it, it'll be pretty good.
You'll stay ahead of it. You'll keep some leaves on the trees, and that's probably going to be good enough for most of us. It may not be perfect, but for something with a very short residual that you can apply, especially to a crop that is producing, it's a good choice.
Well, thank you.
All right, Eric. Good luck. Next up, Sally's on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Sally.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Okay. I see these tall weeds or yellow flowers along the highway, and somebody told me they are poisonous parsnip, and I wanted to know if that's true. And I also heard that you can experience dire effects if touching them. Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, we have a number of plants that are in the carrot family. We have wild carrot, also known as Queen Anne's lace, that has the white flowers. We have poison hemlock. We also have the wild parsnip. These are big plants. They can get to be 3, 4, 5 feet tall. We typically see them in roadside ditches. And if you come in contact with the actual plant, let's say you brush against it, you have shorts on or whatever, and then that skin is exposed to sunlight, you get a reaction, and it can be quite severe. So you want to avoid that plant if you can. You commonly see it in roadside ditches, maybe in some waste areas, that type of place.
And they do have yellow flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wild parsnip does. Am I right, Richard, that the reaction of your skin is sort of like a water blister, and it's called phytophotodermatitis?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's a great name, great word to know, and one you can mix into a conversation someday. That's the sap of the plant in combination with ultraviolet radiation produces a blister on your skin. Either one alone, sunshine or plant sap, won't do it. You have to have both. I think that's pretty intriguing.
And it can be very, very severe, quite painful. So, yeah.
All right, so steer clear.
Yes.
All right, Sally, thanks a lot for your call. We have another parsnip question as well from Phil in Ames. Hi, Phil.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I was just trying to determine, and I appreciate you taking my call. I was trying to determine whether it was a goldenrod or the white flower or the yellow flower, and then they're difficult. Which one do I? I'm trying to eradicate it, but you don't really want to, you know, be out sweating in the sunshine when you do this. So,
right. Well, goldenrod is a native plant, And that typically blooms in late summer, early fall. So
okay.
you wouldn't see that blooming at this point. This has more of a carrot look to it as far as the foliage. It's a huge plant, can be. And I would put on long trousers and long sleeve shirt and gloves and basically try to cover all my skin and then try to cut it down if I could, destroy it. But definitely be well-dressed when you do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to be careful with it because I don't want to, you know, create a nuisance.
Right. Now, this plant is a biennial plant, which means it basically lives 2 years. The first year, the seed germinates, it develops into a clump of leaves pretty close to the ground. The second year, it grows very rapidly, gets 3, 4, 5 feet tall, flowers, produces seed, and then dies. And it does produce a lot of seed. So if you have this, you definitely don't want it to go to seed. So you want to destroy that before it has that ability.
Well, it's already, you know, 5 feet tall, and
right.
it's being, you know, close enough and being mowed by other property owners, you know, and I just was concerned about it spreading even further. And,
right. So
and whether what, but I guess my question was for whoever asked me the first time was, once it's dead, when it dries up, can you handle it? You know,
that that I don't know.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out.
With poison ivy, definitely yes, but with this, I'm guessing maybe not, because once it dries up, you don't have that sap. Mm-hmm. And that would tell me probably not, but I can't be certain on that.
Okay, and when you said with poison ivy, yes, you don't want to touch poison ivy even after it's dead.
Absolutely not, because
right.
it's still there.
The oils are still
there. The oils are still there. But in this case, with the poison, with the wild parsnip, I'm guessing if it really dries up, there's no sap there to get on your skin.
All right, even though gloves might not be a bad idea, right?
I think it'd still be a good idea to have gloves on, yes.
Okay. All right, we will move on now to Frank in Norwalk. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My lilac bushes are dying.
What do they look like when they die? Just no leaves or?
Yeah, the leaves start turning brown and they just slowly die.
Okay.
I have 10 of them, and half of them have died already. And they came out this spring perfect. Mm-hmm. And then over a course of the last few weeks, one starts dying, and it dies, and then another one dies.
Okay. That could be possibly a vascular wilt of some type. Those things do occur. Unfortunately, if that's what it is, you have no way to cure the plants. You have no way to prevent that from occurring. There is no good control strategy on that, if that's what it is. It gets into the vascular tissue, it plugs up the vascular tissue, and so that plant or that branch basically wilts because it can't get water, and then if it's a whole plant, the whole plant dies. So if it has something like a vascular wilt, unfortunately you cannot really do anything.
Well, see, they came out perfect this year,
right.
And everything was going along fine, and all of a sudden one of them died, and another one died. The only thing we've ever done to them, we cut them back last fall.
Right, and that should not have been the problem. So that's not it.
Some aluminum sulfate around them. I can't imagine that would hurt them to make them do that.
I don't think so. I see no reason to do that because they really don't need the sulfur. They don't really need the aluminum. So
well, it was because they weren't flowering, and I went to a place, and they said to put this around, and it would get them to flower again.
I don't believe so. No. So it could be a vascular wilt. That's one possibility. Maybe insects also.
It didn't really sound like lilac borer as you were describing it. We wouldn't expect quite such widespread death of the plants. But you could look down at the base and see if you find these holes with moist sawdust coming out. That's an indication of the caterpillar that bores in there. Of course, what are you going to do next? I suppose wait and see if there's any rejuvenation from the ground. Of course, do the pruning out the stuff that's really, really dead. And
well, unfortunately, they're all really, really dead. I mean, they're dying.
They're not just defoliated.
All the foliage has gone off of them, and it's gone.
Okay. Well, if it was only one or two branches or stems, I would just cut those out and then hope for the best. But if it's the entire plant, it's basically gone, I'm afraid. So.
Yeah, it seems to start at the top and work its way down.
So, well, you may have to plant another shrub there next spring, replace those, possibly a dogwood, viburnum, something of that nature. But you probably cannot stop it if it's a vascular wilt.
Okay, and the borers, you wouldn't be able to do anything with them either.
We have a spray that you can put on the trunk around the base of the plant, but I wouldn't just spray insecticide and hope for the best.
Right,
you really
right.
have to document that that's the, that that's what it is. If you cut these down last year and this is all new growth, there it's probably not the borer because the borer is always in those big old heavy stems that have been there for a while.
No, this is all new growth, and I mean it came. They came out beautiful. I was scared when we cut them down. My wife wanted to do it. And I thought, oh goodness, okay.
Uh-huh.
But they all came back this spring, and everything was hunky dory, and just out of the blue, they just started dying.
They couldn't take the stress of the hot, dry weather. So, after the rain.
All right, Frank, thanks a lot for your call, and we'll try to squeeze in an email question here. This is from Lori. I got some hostas from a friend's garden that was thinning them out. I'm afraid I planted them in an area that gets too much sun, as some are turning yellow and brown. I'm watering them nightly, and they have mulch around them. Do I leave the brown or yellow leaves, and does this mean they're dead? Should I pull them out? Will they come back next year?
I would leave them where they are for the time being, and they'll survive. They may look bad, but they'll survive. Just keep them well watered. They'll survive. And then if you really think they get too much sun, then I would move them early next spring to a shadier spot.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to answer more of your questions about plants and insects. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Turan and ISU Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. You're welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Here's another email. This one is from Katie in Des Moines. When is the best time to divide daylilies? Also, we have daylilies on one side of our home. The area has been completely covered in daylilies for quite a few years. This year, however, we've seen an increase in individual blades of grass. We don't know if this is just grass that has invaded from our yard or if it's new daylily shoots. Is there a way to tell them apart?
Well, the foliage is quite different. So daylily foliage is fairly broad compared to grass like your turf grass or quack grass. So the width would tell me what it is. As far as dividing them, they're pretty amenable. You can do this early in the spring if you wish. You can do it in late summer. Either way works fine.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Lori is on the line from Ames. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, got a painter coming possibly as early as next week. And on one side of my house, I have a large rose that is at the current time about 5 foot tall. And I am thinking about putting some plastic, like a painter's tarp, around it loosely and tying it. Would that be an acceptable solution for a rose so that a painter can work around it?
I don't think I would use plastic or anything of that nature because that might trap some heat within that.
What can I use?
And it might, I'm thinking more like maybe something like a cloth or burlap or something of that nature where you wouldn't have the heat buildup inside that material. So maybe burlap, possibly.
All right. Or a sheet? Would a sheet work?
Possibly a sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just using some twine and going around it several times, possibly.
Just to hold it back out of the way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Lori, thanks a lot for your call. Next up is Bob in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My sister-in-law from Korea identified the brown marmorated stink bug as destroying my zucchini. Now, I know that they were using imidacloprid when they planted it to treat for that. Mm-hmm. I tried it this year, but then I started to think they use a lot of things over there that we probably wouldn't use over here. I wondered if that was recommended. It, so far, it's been effective, but I don't know whether it's just because the season is late.
Brown marmorated stink bugs usually show up later in the season in abundance. They come through the winter in the adult stage. It kind of takes them a while to gear up to populations that are noticeable. Of course, calling from Bettendorf, you're one of about five counties in the state of Iowa where the brown marmorated stink bug has been reported. So listeners from anywhere else, this isn't your problem yet. This is just Bob's problem at the moment. So, imidacloprid has formulations that can be used on fruits and vegetables. I'm reluctant to do it because we're using a systemic that could end up in nectar and pollen. We're using a systemic that has possibilities of ending up inside the plant in places we want to eat. But the timing becomes very critical on that. And that's why imidacloprid is used as a planting time treatment and not later on in the season. So read and follow the label directions is my answer. I think for most growers in Iowa, when we do face brown marmorated stink bug, we will be using the pyrethroid insecticides as a foliar treatment later in the season rather than relying on planting time systemics. So good luck with we've had good luck, good reports at least, with the pyrethroid insecticides back east where the brown marmorated stink bug is a widespread agricultural pest. And we'll be watching their results to see what's going to work best for us. So you're on the forefront. You're going to be telling the rest of us, Bob, what works and what doesn't. So keep in touch.
All right, Bob. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's go next to Susie on the line in Ames. Hi, Susie.
Hello. I'm looking forward to you solving another problem for me. You've been so good in the past. I have a new flock stem, and it has buds on it. It looked very good last year. This is maybe its third year. However, the last couple of days, the buds are dry. They just look dry, and they aren't going to flower. What's going on?
Garden flocks, the tall kind?
Yes.
Okay.
And the foliage itself looks
the
okay?
The foliage, again, looked pretty good. Now it's got a lot of holes in it.
Okay. I'm not sure offhand at this point. They are very susceptible to powdery mildew, and that typically affects the foliage, where you see kind of a very faint white covering on the foliage.
Uh-huh.
The affected leaves turn yellow, then eventually brown,
uh-huh,
usually starting at the bottom and then working up. So it doesn't sound like powdery mildew.
And it doesn't sound like our insect pests. Variegated cutworms were common this year that could have crawled up and chewed on the holes, but that wouldn't dry out the plant. It wouldn't have dried out the flower buds either.
Yeah, well, I figured the holes in the leaves were something, but then when the holes were in the leaves last year too, it didn't seem to bother
right. The
flowering. But this year, yeah, it does.
So if the flower clusters appear to be drying up, I would
yes.
be inclined to just cut them off.
Okay.
And that should encourage additional flower development, and
all
hopefully,
right.
hopefully, the latter ones will be okay. But I would be just inclined to just deadhead them at this point, get rid of those flower heads if they appear to be dying, and hope for a later bloom.
Okay. Anything I should do to take care of the leaves with the holes?
Oh, I think this is we don't have a good answer for that one, and maybe a little more investigation. Try using your flashlight at night to see if there are cutworms feeding there.
Okay.
Are sow bugs crawling up and feeding on the leaves? I wouldn't use an insecticide until I could find a target pest to
okay.
aim at.
Right.
But looking at night with your flashlight sometimes answers these mystery hole questions.
All right.
But if it doesn't, we'll just have to tolerate the damage and hope that the plant recovers and gets better growing weather in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Susie. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Sue in Albernett. Hello, Sue.
Yes, yes. My question is about your Japanese beetles.
Uh-huh.
We have apple trees, about four of them, that we planted probably 6 years ago. They're Honeycrisp.
Mm.
And we get Japanese beetles, eat them all the leaves off, and we've never gotten apples off them. So this year We netted them. I used netting and put netting over them. They're not too big.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to know if you've ever tried the netting or and why we might not be getting apples.
Well, 4 years is kind of a young tree for fruit production, isn't it, Richard? Don't we normally say five or more?
Typically 3 to 5 years when they start to bear fruit, so it
okay.
can be a few years.
So that may just be the immaturity of the trees. Netting is a time-honored tradition for keeping insects off of plants, and it's how we keep mosquitoes from biting us in the middle of the night. If you think about it, we put netting, we call it screens, but we put netting on our windows, and that's a way we protect ourselves. Certainly on small plants and on individual plants, we may use netting to keep the Japanese beetles off. Of course, you don't put netting on apple trees right away because the flowers have to come out. The pollinators have to get to the flowers, the various bees and so forth. Then we could put on the netting. This was not a good year for pollination because of the rain and the cool temperatures that were happening at that time. So there's a lot of scenarios that we can make up, and we'll probably never know exactly what's going on. But as far as protecting the foliage, you have done one of the best things possible, assuming the netting, of course, is small enough to keep the beetles out. Some people use bird netting, and that wouldn't have a small enough grid. But fine mesh netting that keeps the beetles off is a great way of protecting plants. I've seen people put screen boxes over their roses to keep the beetles off, and so it's a mechanical control that works very well.
All right, Sue, thanks a lot for your call. Sam in Iowa City is up next. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, Japanese beetles again. I have last year bought a very effective scent lure-based Japanese beetle trap. It worked like a charm.
Mm-hmm.
I think I bagged up maybe 10 pounds of Japanese beetles in my backyard in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
So no poisons. No messing with nets or any of the other techniques, and it completely reversed their tent. They were all over peach trees and raspberries and grapes, and once I put that thing up there, they just homed in on it, and that was the end of the problem.
I'm glad it worked for you, Sam. You're the exception to the rule. Japanese beetle traps are available. They've been available for a long time. And you caught 10 pounds of beetles out of 20 tons that are in Iowa City area. So as far as a management strategy, yeah, you caught the drop in the bucket. But maybe that's all you needed to catch. But people who have these outbreaks when they're at their peak, and of course Iowa City should, most of Iowa City would be past this invasion peak that we've talked about, it might be good enough. Now, the caution with Japanese beetle traps is, time and again, it's been proven the traps attract more beetles than they catch. And so you never put the trap in the crop you're trying to protect. You put the trap somewhere far away and hope it lures them over. But I'm glad it worked for you, Sam. We've got too much research to indicate that it won't help most people, that we don't recommend them, but we know they're available. And if nothing else, it's emotionally satisfying to say at the end of the season, I have 10 pounds of dead beetles. The next question is, what do you do with 10 pounds of dead, smelly, stinking beetle carcasses? And that's another disposal problem.
We had somebody mention on Facebook earlier, this is from Hope, I caught one last week gnawing on my mammoth sunflower in eastern Dallas County. I chucked it over the fence. Probably not the most effective control system, but it felt good.
It felt good.
That's great that it worked for Sam. Thanks a lot for your call, Sam. And let's move on to Jennifer next. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I don't have a question. I have a comment. The problem with poison ivy and poison parsnip and all that. I found a product that takes the itch out and cures it up even after it's broken out.
Okay.
What did you find that works?
Zanfel, Z as in zebra, A-N-F, as in Frank, E-L. And it works like a charm. And my neighbors have used it, and I've used it, and it's amazing.
It's an ointment or a lotion after the exposure?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an ointment, and you rub it in. You rub it for 3 minutes, And you can get it all over. You can get it at Walgreens and CVS and Walmart, and you can get it on Amazon. It is pricey.
Okay. Jennifer,
it is worth it.
Thank you for the recommendation. Let's move on next to yet another Sam in Iowa City. Hi, Sam.
Good morning. I have a question about my asparagus production this year, which has been somewhat meager. I have planted an asparagus bed several years ago and have followed the extension instructions pretty carefully and resisted harvesting for a couple of years, had a really good harvest a couple of years ago. Last year was good. This year has just been terrible, just a handful of spears. And I'm wondering if it's either the dry weather from last year that it'll rebound, or if my fall yard cleanup crew that happened to saw off all of the feathery vine, the feathery tops to the asparagus plants, might have something to do with it, because I've read in the instructions that you're supposed to leave those on over winter.
Okay.
But and when I'm just kind of wondering if I need to dig them up and get some new ones, or wait and see what next year brings.
Okay.
Or any other thoughts you might have. Thanks. I love your show, too. Thank you.
When did they remove the debris, the foliage?
This would have probably been about November.
That should have been okay. Wouldn't want to do that like in August or September, because the foliage is still green. It's still manufacturing food for the plant. But by November, it should have been basically dead. So that shouldn't have been an issue.
Okay.
The weather could have been an issue, last year's weather. It was very hot and very dry.
Yeah.
That could have been an issue. So my thought would be to wait one more year and see what it does next spring. In the meantime, give it good care. Keep out the weeds. Don't cut it back until it dies basically on its own and turns brown. And then see what it does next year.
And see what happens next year.
Right. If you get a better crop, then great. I think that's a good trend. If the crop next year is poor, then maybe for some reason it's just not going to recover, and I would consider maybe planting a new bed. So I would give it one more year, though.
Okay, Sam, thanks a lot for your call. We'll squeeze in one last question. This is from Eric in Dubuque. Hi, Eric.
I think it's Terry, actually.
Okay.
That's okay. I have a question about, I have tomato plants, and in my backyard, which is all trees in the backyard, there's lots of deer in the neighborhood. And last year, the deer ate my tomatoes right off the vines, which they have never done before.
Okay.
So this year, my neighbor said that he has seen deer sniffing around my tomato plants already, and I didn't know what's the best way to keep them out and what's the least expensive way to keep them out.
I think the best way is some type of fencing, where you physically fence them away. It could be hardware cloth or whatever, but some type of fencing that physically keeps them away from the actual plants.
All right. Eric, or Terry, thanks a lot for your call. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and Donald Lewis, thank you.
Thank you, Charity. Always a pleasure.
Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. We'll keep our eyes open for Japanese beetles. And, of course, we'll be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns in Ames. And now Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, is here to give us a preview of what's coming up today at noon. What do you have planned?
Well, we're going to talk about employment, landing a job. You know, unemployment nationally is about 7.6%. Here in Iowa, we're much better off, 4.6%. But we're going to be talking about landing a job, making a living wage in 2013, and how that's changed. Specifically, look at why college students are starting their careers earlier these days and having to complete several internships by the time they graduate to have a good crack at starting a career. So we hope we'll have plenty of people joining in to hear from you. How did you get your foot in the door to your career? Perhaps you're looking for that first stepping stone into your wished career. We want all
those. Did you do an internship, Ben?
Yes, I did. Strangely enough, in public radio.
Really? I got a job in public radio, an overnight board operator at WOI Radio in Ames, Iowa. That was my first step.
Very good.
All right, that's coming up today at noon on River to River with host Ben Kiefer. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. We'd love to hear your thoughts about things you've heard on the air. We would love to hear your suggestions about things you'd like to hear on the air. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday on Talk of Iowa, we continue our series on corrections in Iowa with an examination of parenting in prison. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.